Dr. Miriam Grossman is a board-certified psychiatrist and author of You're Teaching My Kid What? A Physician's exposes the Lies of Sex Education and How They Harm Our Children. This is the book here. It's available just outside the room. Dr. Grossman has worked as a campus psychiatrist to students at UCLA. And back in September, I had the opportunity to interview her for our e-review, which is available on our website. Reflecting on her experience at UCLA, Dr. Grossman told me, quote, "During that time, thousands of kids came through my office. I was alarmed at how many of them had sexually transmitted infections and was concerned about students, mostly young women, whose sexual lifestyles placed them at risk for disease, emotional distress, and even infertility in the later years. I was frustrated to see patient after patient in similar situations, yet my hands were tied. There wasn't much I could do for them. These were young people who were otherwise well-informed and proactive about their health. They were careful about what they ate, they exercised, they avoided tobacco, and so on. But in this one area, in their sexual behavior, they took alarming risks, and that was perplexing. I began to question these students carefully, and I examined how campus health and counseling centers approach sexual health issues." And this led Dr. Grossman to write her first book, actually, entitled Unprotected: A Campus Psychiatrist Reveals How Political Correctness in Her Profession Endangers Every Student. Dr. Grossman attended New York University Medical School and completed her residency in psychiatry, followed by a fellowship in child and adolescent psychology, or psychiatry, through Cornell University. She writes and speaks to parents, students, educators, and health professionals internationally. I think you will find Dr. Grossman well-researched and her presentation quite frank, which, to be honest, is exactly what this topic deserves. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Miriam Grossman.
Thanks, Peter John. Good afternoon to everybody. It's great to be here. I want to thank David Quist very, very much for making this possible. Andrea, Peter John, and there's volunteers that are, I guess, outside, inside. Thank you so, so much for helping this to happen and bringing me in. And thank you for being in here. It's such a beautiful day outside. Must be tempting. When I graduated from medical school, I took an oath. I raised my right hand, and I swore to prevent disease whenever I could. In my youthful innocence, I believed that the battles that lay ahead of me would be against cancer, heart disease, emotional disorders. I'm no longer so naive. After two decades and thousands of hours with young people in distress, I've discovered my most challenging fight is not against dangerous diseases, but against dangerous ideas. As a physician, I have one objective: to keep people out of the offices of doctors and therapists. After 20 years and thousands of hours listening to my patients, I've concluded that the vision of certain groups, such as Planned Parenthood and CECUS, groups that are at the helm of sexuality education in the U.S., stand in my way. The reason is that their priority is not sexual health, it's sexual freedom. Planned Parenthood and CECUS are large and powerful organizations. They are successfully exporting their dangerous ideas to the international community. I was at the UN this Monday for that reason. I was invited by a group called Family Watch International, and I spoke to delegates who were gathered for the UN's annual Commission on the Status of Women. What I spoke about there was these guidelines that were brought out by UNESCO last year, the International Technical Guidance on Sexuality Education. These guidelines are based on the belief championed by Planned Parenthood and CECAS and other like organizations that sexuality extends from cradle to grave, and that each person, regardless of age, has the right, as they put it, to express their sexuality in whatever manner they choose. Early sexual activity and multiple partners is an assumption, but these, of course, are the very behaviors that fuel the epidemics of genital infections, abortion, emotional distress, and infertility. Those who practice the lifestyle endorsed by these federally funded groups have more doctor's appointments, not less. Now, I'm not so familiar with sex ed in Canada. I understand, though, that those same groups play a major role. So these organizations are reaching your children, too, and you need to know what's going on. I spent the past several years studying the history of sex education. I discovered that instead of being based on hard science, on what's seen under the microscope, sex education is based on a dream. It's a vision of how the world should be. In this world, there are no substantial differences between male and female. If such differences exist, they are due to forces in society against which we are obligated to struggle. In this ideal world, no particular lifestyle is healthier than another. Chlamydia, herpes, HIV, they infect people in a random manner. They are equal opportunity diseases. This vision appeals to many people because, after all, why should girls pay a higher price for promiscuity than guys? It's sexist. It's not fair. But this is a made-up world. It doesn't exist. In the real world, girls have unique biological sensitivities, and early sexual behavior endangers them more than it does boys. That's not sexist. That's something that's seen under a microscope. Furthermore, regarding sexually transmitted infections, certain behaviors and lifestyles are 100% risk-free. Others are treacherous. Now, these are indisputable facts. There is no debating them. And yet, they're omitted by groups that claim to provide our children with all they need to know so they can make informed choices. So please understand, sex education is a social movement. Its goal is to change society. It was that way 50 years ago when it began, and it's still that way now. And they admit it. They say it straight out. On these UNESCO guidelines, on page 3, it says that one of the learning objectives is to change social norms. So they want to change society. They want to change it to a world without sexual taboos and restrictions. They want a world free of Judeo-Christian morality, where each individual, regardless of age, makes his or her sexual choices. Each person decides how much risk he or she is willing to take, and no judging is allowed. These are radical ideas, and they are dangerous ones. Three groups pay the highest price when cradle-to-grave sexual freedom is celebrated: girls, women, and men who have sex with other men. I have found that when hard science challenges this model of human sexuality, it is omitted from sex education. If what's seen under the microscope threatens their dream for society, it doesn't exist. Please keep in mind that these activist educators describe their programs as comprehensive, accurate, science-based, and ideologically neutral. They also claim to be on the same page as parents, meaning they encourage students to practice self-restraint. Well, I've studied their curricula, and I've studied their websites and the material that's created for kids. And I'm here to tell you that sex ed is none of those things. It is not comprehensive, medically accurate, or free of ideology. Educators do not provide the same message kids get at home. In fact, they undermine parents. So these eminent authorities, these organizations, promise one thing and do another. This is a hoax. It's a fiasco. Over the past 20 years, I've seen a steady stream of young people, mostly girls and young women, come through my office who are suffering from the sexual decisions they made. Their suffering was 100% avoidable. I saw so many casualties that I wrote this book, Unprotected. And I called it Unprotected because that's how I came to see the average student on campus, in particular the average female student, as unprotected, naive, and misinformed. In this book, I told the stories of some of my patients and how dangerous sexual ideologies and political correctness contributed to their situations. And it's because of those students that I'm here today. After that book, I began to study what's actually taught in sex ed, especially what's on the websites and books recommended to adolescents. And I wrote my next book, You're Teaching My Child What? Now, what I'm going to do is first explain the origins of these radical views in sexuality education. Then I'm going to show you some of the disturbing things that are taught to our kids. And I'll finish with the good news, which is the science that the industry omits from its programs. Because what's seen under the microscope and discovered on MRIs and on PET scans of the brain affirms traditional values. It affirms the Judeo-Christian morality against which they crusade. So I'm going to start with the history. Now, forgive me for talking fast, but this could really fill an entire book. And I'm going to do it in just 5 or 6 minutes. Where did the radicalism of today's sex education come from? Modern sex education began in the 60s, and it used Kinsey's model of human sexuality as its foundation. We now know that Kinsey's research, upon which he based his crusade for social reform, was fraudulent, and that he was a deeply disturbed individual. I refer you to the work of Dr. Judith Reisman and to the biography by James Jones. In a nutshell, Kinsey was convinced that traditional morality in modern society is irrelevant and destructive. He disapproved of abstinence, he thought monogamy was unnatural, and he dedicated his life to crusading against civil and religious institutions that restrict sexual behavior to married adults. Sexuality is not an appetite to be curbed, he insisted. It was anything goes for Dr. Kinsey, and I mean anything. When I say that Kinsey was a deeply disturbed individual, it fails to capture the level of his psychopathology. I've been a psychiatrist for 20 years. Trust me, I've spent time with some pretty strange people. I am not easily shocked. But when I began to read Kinsey's official biography, what can I tell you? I returned the book to the library as soon as I could. I didn't want it in my house. I'll spare you the details. He was a depraved human being. He was afflicted at his very core. And his affliction expressed itself through his sexuality. I doubt very much that in all the 62 years of his miserable life, he knew even one day of what we in this room would consider healthy sexuality. Now, this is what's so astonishing. This man's, Alfred Kinsey's, personal sexual philosophy has been institutionalized through modern sex education. Today's curricula are based on his teachings. It's as if someone came along and announced, you know, when it comes to diet, we've got it all wrong. I have the research to prove it. My way is better. Lots of red meat, fried foods, sugar, and no exercise. Look, I have the data to prove this. People get excited about it and they build a whole industry around these new guidelines for nutrition. And then it's discovered that this individual promoting these guidelines was obese, had hypertension, diabetes, and heart disease. It is that nuts. It is that insane. That's what we've done, and this is how it happened. Kinsey died in 1956, but in the early 60s, CECUS was found by Mary Calderon, who had worked previously at Planned Parenthood. She used seed money from Hugh Hefner to establish CECUS. Mary Calderon believed, like Kinsey, that there was an urgent need to break from traditional views about sexuality. Sex ed has too much negativity, she insisted, too much focus on unwanted pregnancy and diseases. The real problem, she said, was that society is puritanical and repressed. The answer is to teach children from the day they're born that sexuality is positive, natural, and healthy. There were too many no's, Dr. Calderon insisted. Her approach, the approach of CECUS, would be based on yeses. I want to just put this into historical context. In terms of sexually transmitted diseases at that time, the big ones, the only ones people were really concerned about, were syphilis and gonorrhea. And those were called at that time venereal diseases. In the 50s, 40s and 50s, antibiotics became available that basically it was thought they would eradicate those infections. And we didn't have, obviously, HIV. Chlamydia was not even reportable. Herpes was there, but it was, you know, the people that had these infections were prostitutes and members of small groups that were considered sort of outside mainstream society, let's put it that way. So there was a feeling at that time that infections didn't have to be a source of concern. And then in 1960, oral contraceptives became available, the birth control pill, and it was felt that unwanted pregnancies were no longer an issue. So the only obstacles to replacing all those no's with yeses, it was thought at that time, was middle class morality and convention. So in founding CECUS, Mary Calderon set out to transform how American children were taught about sex. Now this is very important. In addition to an openness and a feeling of that sex is positive, the purpose of sex education was not to force any particular standard, sexual standard, on anyone. Merely to make information available, to help young people to reach their own decisions. Teachers were not to emphasize a particular standard or to judge or interfere with teens' sexual choices. There was no one best way, and to convey otherwise was to sermonize, and that was one of the most objectionable components of traditional sex education. So this new approach would be based on moral neutrality. Parents and teachers would provide information and then step back as students exercised their right to determine and practice whatever it was best for them. Now let's get specific. What did that mean exactly to be open and positive, to replace the no's with yeses? What does it mean to break from traditional views about sexuality? It meant a lot more than premarital or extramarital sex. I promise you that. From a book for parents by CECUS founder Mary Calderon. Children are sexual and think sexual thoughts and do sexual things. Parents must accept and honor their child's erotic potential. Professionals who study children have recently affirmed the strong sexuality of the newborn. This came from Kinsey's studies of pedophiles with infants, and the fact that an infant can experience an erection. That was the conclusion, that a newborn is a sexual being. But it goes more further than that. Well, here's the quote about just making information available. Sexuality education seeks to provide an opportunity for young people to question, explore, and assess their own and their community's attitudes about society, gender, and sexuality. The big important words here are to question and to explore. This means to question what they've been taught at home, to explore other alternatives to what they've been taught in church. Now, this is the co-founder of CECUS wrote, religious taboos are highly restrictive. Our whole belief system needs to be reconsidered. Traditional religion has failed in that it walled people in. It prescribed boundaries for thinking. Boundaries were out. This was a time where that was a dirty word to have boundaries. This is in the 60s. He also said, that the boundaries of human sexuality need to be expanded, and physical pleasure has worth as a moral value. Now, I don't mean to imply that this sort of shocking kind of thing is happening now, but the vice president of CECUS, Wardell Pomeroy, publicly spoke about, he said, it's time to admit that incest need not be a perversion or a symptom of mental illness. Likewise, John Money, a board member of CECUS, said, and this is a quote from Time Magazine. Time Magazine, April 14, 1980. A childhood sexual experience, such as being the partner of a relative or of an older person, need not necessarily affect the child adversely. So the radicalism of these activists cannot be exaggerated. They sought to destroy traditional morality. And they were sophisticated, credentialed, and supported by eminent institutions, just like today. The founder of CECUS was so fired up and confident, she even wrote to the Pope. She told him that he should not condemn masturbation because studies had shown it was not harmful. He didn't answer. So to summarize, the fundamentals of modern sex education, cradle-to-grave sexuality, restrictions need to be abolished, no one standard is best, provide information, step back, let the kids decide, no sermons and no judgments. Once you understand that, it's easy to see how we got to the situation where the number one priority of sex education is to promote sexual freedom. Now, this is the cover of a pamphlet called Talk About Sex. You can find it on the CECUS website. It's a pamphlet that was written by CECUS, and it's distributed to high school students and possibly middle school students as well. And it's available online as a resource recommended for kids to read. This is how it starts. Every human being has basic rights. Still, adults may say and do things that make young people feel like they don't have rights. It's important for you to know your rights so you can stand up for yourself when necessary. Now, this is talking about sexuality. Can you imagine if it was about alcohol? Or, you know, seatbelts while you're driving? Smoking, right? At every point in your life, you can choose if and how to express your sexuality. Most sexual behaviors involve some level of risk. It is up to you to determine how much risk you are willing to take. Now note what's missing here. They don't tell kids that there is a sexual lifestyle with no risk. That's omitted. What they want kids to walk away with is to know that most sexual behaviors do have some risk. Now,